The Reflections of a Jewish Southerner, next on Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Join me now for readings and a conversation with writer Eli Evans. He's here to talk about his new book, The Lonely Days Were Sundays.
I'm not certain what it means to be both a Jew and a Southerner, to have inherited the Jewish longing for a homeland while being raised with the Southerner's sense of home. The conflict is deep in me. The Jew's involvement in history, his deep roots in the drama of man's struggle to understand deity and creation. But I respond to the Southerner's commitment to place, his loyalty to land, to his own tortured history, to the strange bond beyond color that Southern blacks and whites discover when they come to know one another.
Writer Eli Evans. He'll be back in just a moment to read from and talk about his new book, The Lonely Days Were Sundays, Reflections of a Jewish Southerner. Soundings is a cultural affairs service of the National Humanities Center. Partial support for this program comes from Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas. Eli Evans is a Southerner and a Jew. The son of a former mayor of Durham, North Carolina, Evans grew up seeing the South from the perspective of a minority whose ancient history of suffering sharpened his sense of the ill effects of contemporary prejudice. Yet by the time he was a boy, Evans says the course of Southern history had started to change, mainly for the better. In his new book, Eli Evans outlines the shape and implications of those changes. The book is The Lonely Days Were Sundays, subtitled Reflections of a Jewish Southerner. Evans takes his title from the words of his grandmother, recalling her life in eastern North Carolina during the early 1900s. She wrote, "The lonely days were Sundays, Sundays when I watched the town people going to church while we stayed upstairs in our apartment. Then I would feel like an outsider in this little community. I would have hunger for my own people. I would visualize a utopia, a village like this of all Jews, going to temple on the Sabbath." Eli Evans is the author of The Provincials, A Personal History of Jews in the South, and a biography of Judah P. Benjamin, the Confederate cabinet officer. Evans himself served as a White House aide and speechwriter during the Johnson administration and is currently president of the Charles Revson Foundation. In praise of Eli Evans's new book, the Israeli statesman Abba Ibn recently wrote, "The Jews of the South have found their poet laureate." I asked Eli Evans to read from The Lonely Days Were Sundays.
I believe that no one born and raised in the South, even if one moves away physically, can escape its hold on the imagination. I was touched in childhood by its passions and myths, by its language and literature, by the rhythm of its seasons, by the menacing fear of violence and the love of land, by the complexities of race and religion, by the heartbeat of its music, the intensity of its history, and the turbulence of its politics, by its sunlight and its shadows, its illusions and mysteries. With such entanglements, a native son remains irredeemably and endurably Southern. So it has been with me, immersed in the endless fascinations and dense matrix of Southern history entwined with Jewish roots, resonating in my soul forever.
Eli Evans, welcome back to the National Humanities Center. I congratulate you on the publication of The Lonely Days Were Sundays. Why were Sundays lonely days for Southern Jews?
Well, that quote, of course, comes from my grandmother, who lived in eastern North Carolina. And they were the only Jews in their hometown, so it was a particularly lonely time for them. But for me, it was kind of a metaphor of a kind of soul loneliness that comes from living in the Bible Belt, from growing up Jewish in the Bible Belt, a very, very special experience for Jews in America. And indeed, you know, I now say that all of us who are Jews in the United States are now Southern Jews because of the rise of televangelism and the rise of fundamentalism generally. We're all living in a world that's very much like the world I grew up in. That's what that Lonely Days of Sundays metaphor means.
How much, Eli, has that situation changed over, you look back at the time when you were a boy, do you still feel that palpable sense of a minority within a minority of exclusionary politics and culture?
No, I think the South has gone through such a profound change in the last 40 years. It's been, Shelby Foote, the great historian, says it's been a kind of miracle. That the South seems to have made it through this from its terrible beginnings to where it is now with a degree of of a balance that the other parts of the country could envy, and that our challenge as a region for the 21st century is to show people how blacks and whites can live together in a region. The answer, the 1965 Voting Rights Act, which brought 2.5 million black voters into the rolls, changed Southern politics totally, allowed two Southern governors to be elected president, the first Southerners to be elected since the end of the Civil War, and changed the South totally. And what it meant was for minorities that it's just a lot easier to be Jewish, to be Catholic, to be Vietnamese in Louisiana, right, to be Cuban, to be anything in the South now. People are much more open to the minority, to the varieties of the Southern experience, mm-hmm, than they were.
Let's look at it in what terms that take into account this whole notion of the historical, which is a very important word for both Southerners and for Jews. The phrase "the burden of history" comes to mind. Is that a good phrase or a bad phrase for you now?
Well, it's both a good and a bad phrase. I think Jews carry a special burden of history just because our whole religious beliefs are built around a knowledge of history. We are linked together deeply by the history of the Jewish people. Uh-huh. And it's one of the things that Jews and Southerners really have in common. Southerners carry their history inside them into the present day. And I find that a very fascinating union of interests. And, you know, Southerners during the Civil War considered themselves kind of the chosen people. They actually used that phrase. Picked by God, you know, to carry a special message. That message was distorted because it was a message that embraced slavery and mm-hmm, led to a great war on this continent. But Jews and Southerners also have this great attachment to place. Southern Jews share Southern history with Gentiles in the South, with non-Jews in the South, and we also share a kind of love of land, a kind of search, mm-hmm, if I can say that. And therefore, I find a lot of commonality between the two peoples, particularly when you look at it from a Southern Jewish perspective, which is my perspective.
Mm-hmm. You say, for example, in this quotation from your grandmother, the word utopia appears in that quotation. To be in search of utopia and to be a Southern Jew, are we replaying the whole metaphor or the historical experience of, you know, those 40 years in the wilderness? Is that too much of a stretch?
Well, I'm sure for her, you know, the immigrants who came from Eastern Europe across this ocean, think of it, through Ellis Island, and then my grandmother and my grandfather strike out for the South, not knowing what this land is like. My grandfather was a peddler, which is the way most Jews started. They were staked to a pack on their back. And then he made a little more money to buy a wagon. In fact, I once interviewed Alice Walker, the great black novelist, when she was in Mississippi and not well known at all. And she told me that her grandmother called the peddlers who came around the rolling store man, because he would come out and sell them stuff. Then the roads got better, and the farmers started coming to town, and they opened stores. And this story was told over and over again, finally to my own generation, of the fathers who built businesses for their sons who didn't want them. Uh-huh. Whereas in the North, the Jews believed in kind of up and out of the ghetto into the profession, my son the lawyer, my son the doctor.
Right.
In the South, the Jews built homes and businesses for their children to stay there, to be rooted. And yet they too, as the chain stores came, I remember some man once told me that it used to be that every little town had its own Jewish store, and now the chain stores came and every town looks alike. That was the end of a real era of small town Jewish life. They just couldn't, the mom and pop stores couldn't make it, and so the children were up, but they weren't going to New York City as I did. Most of them went to Atlanta and New Orleans and Houston, Dallas. These were the fastest, Charlotte. These were the fastest growing Jewish communities in the South.
Well, now, if Jews and Southerners appear to have so much in common, apropos of these comments that you're making now, Eli Evans, what was it that separated them? I mean, where did the tension come from?
Well, the tension came in a kind of dark side of Christianity, if I can put it that way, the twisted image of the burning cross and the homogeneity that the South insisted on, and that and a kind of story that is very well known, really, and very widely written about. What's less known, what fascinates me, really, is what we call philo-Semitism, this love of the Jews that is also in the fundamentalist heart. My grandfather, for example, was the expert on the Old Testament in his store. In that little store, he told me that farmers would bring their babies by to be blessed in the original Hebrew, as they put it. And he was also the expert on all things biblical. I remember once he told me that two men came in and said, you know, what was the percentage of wine that was the percentage of alcohol that was in the wine that was drunk at the Last Supper? And he said he thought a minute and he said 18.5%. And they said, I thought so. And they stormed out to do battle with the temperance ladies in the 30s during Prohibition.
Well, you know, there's a wonderful phrase that comes to mind. I believe it's Flannery O'Connor, the Christ-haunted landscape. Tell me about that southern landscape and its relation to Jewish people, its effect on Jewish people. Oh, what, when you were a boy again, 30, 40 years ago, and now today.
You have to remember that my father was elected mayor of his town. Six times for over 12 years.
This is E.J. Mutt Evans.
Right, E.J. Mutt Evans. Mm-hmm. And so I was raised in the precincts. I was raised in this kind of earthy political atmosphere that is Southern politics, even today.
Was it Christ-haunted?
Well, it wasn't easy for Jews to be elected to office just because they were different. But one of the most moving parts of my father's campaign was the way the churches in town came to his defense. He, after all, was elected by the emerging black vote in this town. This was in the 1950s. We had a very unusual city because we had the largest black-owned business in the world in North Carolina Mutual Insurance, therefore right. A very organized and sophisticated black community. And Dad led the town to integrate its stores, to integrate its public accommodations, its schools, everything, and the police, the fire department. So it was a really turbulent time also because it was the beginning of a real white reaction in the South in the 50s and early 60s. I mean, everybody who went through it remembers it, the demonstrations and so forth.
Well, but again, to come back to Flannery O'Connor's phrase, this wasn't because of your father's religion or theology or doctrine. It was because of his politics. There was still that rub between being Jewish and living in this predominantly Christian society.
Yes, while there have been Jewish conservative figures in Southern history politically, almost all of them have been bridge builders and people who were trying to bring towns together, if mm-hmm. one looks at the whole history. I think there was something in this connection between Jews and blacks. It's very profound. It exists to this day, I believe, all over the country, and any bumps in the relationship are momentary. And it comes from the fact that, as you know, one of the great rationales for slavery was the conversion of the heathen from Africa into Christianity.
Right.
But the slaves who came to the South heard a different melody, and it was in the Old Testament. It was go down, Moses, let my people go. It was the liberation of the Jewish people out of the land of bondage into the land of freedom. And there was this deep and profound connection. And from a Jewish point of view, from my grandfather's point of view, the peddlers had no relationship to blacks in the old country where they came from. His fear was of the whites, of the Russians who would come storming into his little shtetl, his village, with these pogroms, burning and looting and raping. It was horrifying. So his fear was of the whites around him, not of the blacks. And the blacks, when they met him, he did not own slaves. He came to their houses to serve them. He was only there to help. And therefore, there was a real connection from the very beginning.
Eli Evans, your book is The Lonely Days Were Sundays, Reflections of a Jewish Southerner. As economically as you can, tell me the highs and the lows, your most vivid memory of the good memories you had as a Southern kid growing up Jewish and the bad memories.
Well, the good memories are that that the South that people read about is not the South that that exists. It is mostly a placid, wonderful boyhood, at least from where I came from. And I think most Jews who grew up in the South, in a way, pass for white in this mysterious underland of America. You know, these ethnic differences aren't really so noted by the masses, and one has a way of being a part of it. I think the other part of the really high moment for me was that when my father was attacked by racist newspapers and so forth, the whole community came to his defense. There were anti-Semitic literature, there were people passing it out, the churches in town rallied to his defense. It was a great moment in Durham, and it was repeated again in Atlanta after the bombing of the temple in 1958, where the whole establishment, the media, the politicians, the churches, everyone came to the defense of the Jewish community. And it was a turning point in Atlanta's history when the mayor showed up that morning. And one could go moment after moment across the South and feel that rallying point. On the bad side, it was the threats that came in the middle of the night. It was the burden of being any mayor and in a town that's in a moment of change, where one, as my father was trying to pull things together. And there were those fairly harsh moments of threats and so forth. But all in all, I look back on the South as a very complicated time. But for me, being Southern and Jewish is now a matrix. You know, in Jewish life, every Friday night we eat a challah, a bread that's twisted together. And I feel this Southern Jewish business with me is my Yochna Fatafa County. I'll be writing about it the rest of my life. It's my challah also, a kind of sweet period in my life that I don't think I can ever unravel. It's fascinating.
It's not too much of a stretch to say that you serve grits along with this special bread.
right, exactly. It's a, grits and football tickets.
Eli, talk to me about Jewish Southerners in terms of the way Jews in the South have helped to shape Southern culture and politics. For example, we could go back to the 19th century. You wrote a book about Judah P. Benjamin. You may want to comment about Judah Benjamin. You may want to talk to me about more contemporary kinds of things.
Well, I think if one looks back in Southern history, there were many, many Jewish office holders, hundreds really, up in the 400 and 500s over the course of Southern history. Mayors, city councilmen, state office holders. Judah Benjamin fascinated me, and I wrote a biography about him, as you know, because he was the first Jew elected, first acknowledged Jew elected to the U.S. Senate. He served as Attorney General, Secretary of State, and Secretary of War to the Confederacy, an absolutely fascinating figure, probably the most liberated Jew of his age. You know, for the Jews who came out of Eastern Europe, out of Europe, that liberation was accepted by Benjamin, who strove to go as far as he could go, was offered a seat on the U.S. Supreme Court 60 years before Louis Brandeis, and would have been the first Jew on the court had he accepted, but he wanted to be in the U.S. Senate.
Well, was the imprint that a man like Judah P. Benjamin left on the South, was that imprint particularly religious in its nature? I mean, what difference did it make that he was Jewish?
It was in the sense that everyone attacked him as Jewish. Whether he was openly practicing Jew didn't really matter. He was a Jewish figure to everyone around him, and for Jews he was a Jewish figure. So he was for them like John F. Kennedy, the first Catholic president, or Tom Bradley, the first mayor of a major city in Los Angeles, or Dinkins or Wilder in Virginia. He was a figure who broke the devil mold, if I can say that, who showed that Jews could serve. I don't want to dwell too much on Benjamin because there were other great figures. There was Bernard Baruch from South Carolina, who shaped American policy. There was Harry Golden, of course, the great humorist and writer from Charlotte, North Carolina. I could mention others, but I think the more interesting thing to talk about is the way that most Jews participate in their community. Jews know that everyone will judge all the Jewish people by the few Jews that they know. And so one grows to be a special community leader. So if you look at the museums, the symphonies, the libraries, the universities, the colleges, the schools across the South, you'll always find Jews active on their boards, on their cultural community and so forth, in their cultural community. They're just leaders in the community. They're supposed to be. But the South is making itself into the mainstream of the country, its views, its social views and so forth. One can run for president from the South, after all, and be elected. And therefore, the South is becoming a much different place, a region much more hospitable to outsiders. Economic growth in the South in the last 25, 30 years has been extraordinary. The burden of racism and demagoguery has been lifted off the South. I knew that was true when George Wallace ran for governor. I asked a friend to send me up a tape of him in a black church saying, and I can still hear his voice, "I made a real mistake during those early years. Would you please vote for me now?" And even Strom Thurmond in his 80s as a U.S. senator has blacks on his staff and searches out for the black vote in South Carolina. Things have changed.
One of the words that's on the minds of American educators and parents and students, for that matter, is multiculturalism, Eli Evans. What does the Jewish experience in the South have to teach us about coming to terms, coming to grips with a word like that?
Well, I believe that there was a time when my grandfather came here, and the cry to be American was on his lips, when the next generation learned to be Americans by being ashamed of their grandparents. That was very much a part of it. My mother even told me the stories of how she sometimes dreaded for when her parents came to school because they'd be so different than the other parents who were there. She loved them, of course, but that was just the case. I think those days have changed, and one can now think of America as much more of a marble cake than a melting pot. We're not a melting pot when everybody kind of comes out the same. We really are a country in which you have to respect your history. The more you respect your history, the more this country is alive and a part of each other. We are the unique country on the earth now. And when one looks across the globe, the American experience becomes even more vital. It must work. How else can these ethnic differences, which are causing people to kill each other in Yugoslavia, which are about to cause warfare in the republics in Russia, there are almost 70 tribal wars across this planet now. And the democratic American answer is the only answer, this respect for diversity and pluralism. But in order to do that, we must respect all peoples and where they come from. You know, all my life, people would ask me, why don't you believe in Jesus? You know, that was just a part of my boyhood, that question. My parents always taught me that that was my opportunity to teach. That was my opportunity to explain. And we led an open Jewish life. My father put on his posters when he ran for office, President Bethel Congregation, Chairman United Jewish Appeal. And I asked him, why in the world did you do that? And he said, well, I don't know, people down here respect church work.
Eli Evans, who are the Southern Jewish pathfinders, to use a word that I think you're quoting John Gardner in your book. Who are the Southern Jewish pathfinders of the 1990s? I take it that without being immodest, you would put yourself in that category.
Well, I think there are hundreds, you know, in legislatures and so forth across the South still. But without dwelling too much on office holders, I think of them as kids who are teenagers today who are being raised in a far different South than I ever dreamed that they would be raised in. This is a South where that has changed profoundly, where they are accepted in every part of it. And so from a Southern Jewish point of view, I think there's a tremendous contribution ahead of us. We will have our novels. We will have our plays. It's a much more relaxed atmosphere than I grew up in, and an atmosphere in which kids will be able to thrive and be themselves. I think that's going to be something to look forward to.
Well, now, I can't let you go with sounding quite so optimistic. I mean, you know, there is still such a thing as racism and social exclusion in this country. I take it that the Jews are simply past that, Southern Jews at any rate?
No, they're not past it, and I think all of us have a struggle to look deep within us in terms of what biases we have. We have a responsibility to teach our children. Now that I have an 8-year-old kid, I'm much more aware of how these attitudes can be taught and how these attitudes cannot be taught.
What do you want for your little Joshua, for example?
Well, I want him to grow up in a world that's more open. I want him to grow up in a world in which he's not afraid of others and they're not suspicious of him. I want him to grow up in a world in which there's not the threat of nuclear war. I don't want him to grow up in a world in which there's peace in the Middle East. I would have never thought that would occur in his lifetime, and yet in his little lifetime, the whole world has changed. All the paradigms have changed. The world is struggling for something new and, I think, very exciting.
Well, apropos of that comment, Eli Evans, let's move toward a conclusion of our conversation. Is the Southern Jewish experience, does it provide some sort of a model, an analogy, looking back in time rather than forward, for this remarkable series of turns of events that we are experiencing in the Middle East today? Too much of a stretch?
No, I don't. I think it has to do with the fact that as a Jew in the South, as a Southern Jew, my grandfather would never have called himself a Jewish Southerner, which is one of the reasons I picked that idea as the subtitle for my own book. One, in a sense, testifies every day. You have to know yourself. You have to know your history. You have to explain yourself if you're going to live openly. And you have to learn to accept others who are different than you as you ask them to accept it of you. I think there is a lesson in that. There's certainly a lesson in the Middle East. We have these two great religions, three actually, all twisted together in Jerusalem, all of who believe that they were God's choice on earth, and all of whom must learn to accept the differences around them and respect those differences. That's the lesson for Jews in the South, that Jews in the South give to Jews all over the world, mm-hmm. and that Christians must accept and Muslims must accept as well. I think that if we have a chance in the Middle East to do it, you can do it anywhere. Those passions are deep, and yet there were hundreds of years in which these two religions coexisted. So it's not as if they're not precedents. They are precedents. And therefore, one has to call on those precedents and hope that they can see us through what clearly will be a turbulent time. But I think without Russian arms in the Middle East, a very exciting time.
Eli Evans, a footnote to our conversation. What's it like to live as a Southern Jew in New York City who has roots at two ends of the country here? Are you looked upon by your Yankee friends as a Southerner or as a Jew or both?
I often tell people that growing up Jewish in the South is a lot like being Gentile in New York. No, I don't want to be flip about a question like that. It's complicated. I'm trying to raise a kid with Jewish concerns and Southern concerns. You know, I took some dirt from North Carolina into the delivery room when he was born.
When he was born.
Right, and with one hand I held his hand, held my wife's hand, and with the other hand I clutched that Southern dirt so that he wouldn't feel that he was born altogether in the North. Uh-huh. I did that because you want to start these family tales early.
Well, you sound like you're utterly at home in both worlds. Eli Evans, I want to thank you for coming by the National Humanities Center. Let me mention your books. The most recent is The Lonely Days Were Sundays, Reflections of a Jewish Southerner. This is available from the University Press of Mississippi. You've also written a book called The Provincials about Jewish life in the South, and you're the author of a biography of Judah P. Benjamin and the president of the Charles Revson Foundation. Eli, it's great to see you again. Good luck in your work.
Thank you, Wayne. Thanks for inviting me.
This is Soundings, a magazine of ideas and insights from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. In a moment, I'll tell you where to write if you'd like to have an audio cassette of this week's show. You've been listening to a conversation with Eli Evans. His new book is The Lonely Days Were Sundays, Reflections of a Jewish Southerner, available from the University Press of Mississippi. Send $5 for an audio cassette of this program or $2 for a complete catalog of Soundings discussions. Write to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code is 27709. This week, please ask for program number 689. That's program number 689, the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code 27709. Next week, Orthodoxy and Christian Scripture. Join me for a conversation with Bart Ehrman, a professor of religious studies at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Bart Ehrman will be here to discuss his new book, The Orthodox Corruption of Scripture, a study of doctrine, theological controversy, and the development of the text of the New Testament. Until next week, this is Wayne Pond. Partial support for this program came from Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas. Soundings is a cultural affairs service of the National Humanities Center.